Hey, welcome back to Endpoint TV. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, and today we're doing hands-on lab number 3 for the WCF REST Starter Kit. That's the REST Collection Service Lab, and this is going to be a fantastic lab. Here's what you're going to learn in this lab. We're going to begin by just creating a read-only service using the REST Collection Service template. We'll kind of explore it a little bit, see how it works, modify the sample code a little bit, and then we'll move on to changing it so instead of using this sample implementation, we'll actually hook it up to a data layer that accesses a database and returns some wine data for the fictional Coho Winery. And then we're going to add the code to support adding, updating, and deleting wines. We'll test it using a proxy tool called Fiddler. And finally, we'll take a look at some of the threading issues that might go on and some unit tests to verify the correct behavior. So that's Lab 3. Stick around because we're going to fire up right now. Now the first step that we got to do is run our lab setup. I'm looking at the Lab 3 directory and there's a little script there called lab setup. We have to run that. It's going to remove the existing working directory and kind of copy files around so we're all good to go there. And this way you can reset the lab if you get partway through or you don't remember where you left off. You can always start over from the beginning. Now I'm going to open Visual Studio Team System here, and Control-Shift-O, I'll go into the working folder there, and there's our solution, the REST collection. And now we create an existing project because it already has some things in it, and we wanted to give you a head start on those. If we look here in the shared folder, there's a couple of assemblies that we'll be using that the Coho Winery web team put together for us. And then there's some solution items and some integration tests. We'll get a grip on all of those later. First thing I want to do is add a new project. So I'm going to come in here to New Project. I'm looking under Visual C Sharp Web and a REST Collection WCF service. We're going to name our service Coho Winery. This is going to create a new website for us. Of course, you could add this to an existing website if you wanted. And we'll need to set some properties on our website just to make things convenient. We'll go in here to the Web tab and scroll down here. We're going to use a specific port. There's nothing magic about this port. It's just a port number that we used in all the labs. Then I'm going to drag the default HTML over here to Coho Winery so I can add that to the project. Now I'm going to right-click on our service and say View in Browser. Okay, let's just see what we got with the REST collection template. We got a bunch of stuff there. There's some code. It's actually functional code, but it's not very interesting the first time you run it because it produces an empty collection. Okay, now let's open our service svc.cs file. We're going to modify the implementation of onGetItems there. This is the method that gets called when you just hit the service with no arguments or anything. So we need to change this. Right now it's just returning an empty collection, and I thought to make it more interesting, we'll just new up some sample items. And so we'll new up 3 of them, A, B, and C, and we'll return a value. Okay, so let's right-click on the browser, say View in Browser, and we'll see what we get this time. Now we get some data in our browser. This is kind of interesting, and I want you to notice some interesting things about it. First of all, the sample item is this part right here that says item, okay, and it has a value, a property that returns a string. Now, this got wrapped inside of another item called item info. It's item info of T. It comes from the REST starter kit, and this thing adds an edit link property. Now, RESTful people use this term they call hypermedia as the engine of application state. I know that's difficult to understand, but one of the key ideas is that you ought to be able to navigate through data using hyperlinks. So what the REST Starter Kit has done here is added a link for us for this particular item and says, if you want to edit this item, this is the link you follow. Okay? And that got wrapped up. The item infos got all wrapped up into a collection called item info list. So that's what we've done here. So in task 2, what we want to do is sample items great and everything, but we are Coho Winery, so we want to return some wine data from our data layer. And so we're going to make some changes to the sample implementation to do that. Let's get started. Now if I hit F12 on sample item, it takes me right to the class where sample item is implemented.
Now I'm going to use a little refactoring trick. If I right-click on this and say refactor, rename, I'm going to change the name of this to wine data. Okay, and it changed it all throughout my my solution here. But you might say, well, gee, Ron, that doesn't look like wine data. Exactly. So what we're going to do now is we're going to actually delete that class. Okay, because we actually have a class named wine data elsewhere in our project, and it comes from one of the other assemblies that we're going to use. So I'm going to right-click on the references here for Coho Winery and add a reference. You remember those projects that we included at the beginning, the Coho shared contracts and Coho shared entities? Now's where we need them. So let's add a reference for those two. And great, now we're going to go up to the top of the file and add the using statement for Coho shared contracts and Coho shared entities. Now that we've got those in our namespace, we're almost there. Now there's one other thing we need to do, which is add a connection string. We're using our entity framework in the data layer, and our entity framework class needs a connection string. So I'm copying this out of the lab manual and just paste it into our web config here. So we have a connection string named CohoDBEntities. It's an entity framework connection string. If you've ever seen one of these, you probably know that what this looks like. And one other thing to note is the name of the server is ./SQLExpress. Okay, that's because I'm assuming you're using the local SQL server that was installed with Visual Studio. Okay, if you're using some other database, that's okay. You just have to put the different name of the database in here. All right, now let's go back to our service code here. And we're going to go back to onGetItems. And now we have some better code that we're going to replace this with instead of just returning the sample data. Now in the lab manual, I show you what code to do, so I'm just going to paste that code in here. And all we're doing is we're calling to our data layer. So we have a data layer called CohoDB. It implements a table gateway pattern, so it has a static member called wineGateway. And we just call into a method, getWines. Now, there's something you should know about this method right here. You'll notice that onGetItems returns an enumerable of key value pair of string of wine data. It's just, you know, kind of scary looking. So what I did is I made my data layer return a dictionary of string wine data. It turns out that that's really totally compatible with enumerable of key value pair of blah, blah, blah. So if you want to make this real easy on the service side, just make something in your data layer that returns a dictionary. You'll be fine. The next thing we need to do is change our onGetItem method. So let's go a little full screen here so we can see it. Right now, it just returns something from a dictionary, a local dictionary. We're just going to paste in the code from the lab manual here and take a look at it. We're getting a string parameter, an ID. Now, our data layer wants to use an int as an ID. So in this case, I'm going to declare an int, and I'm going to try to parse that string into an int. If this does not work, if you pass something as the ID is not a string that we can convert to an int, we want to throw bad request because there's something wrong with your request. We can't process it. If it does work, then we're just going to go back to our wine gateway and call getWine, passing in the ID, and that'll be fine. Now, there's one other thing you might notice about this code. It's a new kind of exception that comes from the REST starter kit. It's the web protocol exception. So I can throw one of these exceptions whenever I want to pass back a certain HTTP status code. It's a very convenient way to do it. Highly recommended. Now let's launch this in the debugger and see if it works. Now I hit F5. I notice we're launched on port 25,000. Be careful, watch out for that. If you didn't save all of the settings, you might not get this. And now we're looking at quite a bit more data. This is wine data from the wines database. And so it has things like the short wine name and some vintage and so forth. Bunch of information here. It's pretty cool. And one other thing that's pretty interesting about this is that that edit link comes in real handy here. Like I'm looking at wine 26 here. So if I want to access that wine, I can just copy that in, paste it in the browser, and navigate to just wine 26. And so right away, I see that the RestStarter kit has given me a very nice way of representing my wine data out to the web for kind of a read-only service. Get one or get all of them. Great. That's pretty cool, you say, but what about JSON? Because, you know, on the web, a lot of AJAX programmers would rather deal with JSON data than XML. Does this support JSON? Not a problem, my friend, because the RestStarter kit has built-in support for this. If I just put in a query string parameter, format equals JSON, and launch that, now IE is saying, well, I got this stream. I don't know what it is. It's called Application Whack JSON. You want to save it? Okay, let's save it. I'm just going to store it here on my disk, and we'll call this JSON.txt. Yeah, I already did this before. Okay, so it saves the stream, and then we can come in here to IE, and we can word wrap this, and you can see there's some JSON data, right? It's nice because it's very compact and gives you just what you want. If you're an AJAX developer, you probably like this a whole lot. Now, one other thing I want to just note here is what happens if I ask for a wine that does not exist, like wine zero. Well, it doesn't exist in the database, so what's going to happen is our data layer is going to throw an exception, and the RestStarter kit says, wow, I don't have that, so it throws a web protocol exception, which gives us a 404, not found. Okay? Well, that's the way that REST services work. Now let's move on to exercise two. In this exercise, we're going to update the collection, and I'll show you how you modify the starter kit template to support updating, adding new ones, and deleting items from your collection. And we're going to use the Fiddler test client to test these out. So let's get started. So let's go to the onAddItem method. We'll make that full screen here. And just right now, we have a little sample implementation. We're just going to paste in the code from the lab manual. It's pretty simple what we've got going on here. We do a little try block here, and we try to append a wine. Now, if the data layer does not like this wine data, it might validate it. It might say you're missing some fields or has some invalid values or some kind of business logic, something it doesn't like about this. It'll throw an argument exception or maybe an argument null exception, which inherits from argument exception. In that case, we're going to catch the argument exception, and we're going to say, that's a bad request. You sent me something. I can't use it. It's your fault. It's a bad request. Okay? If we don't catch the argument exception, WCF is going to catch it. And because it doesn't want to interpret for us, it will return a server error 500, which is internal server error. That's not what we want to say because it's not an internal error. It's a bad request. Once we get back from our append wine, we're going to do some magic here to pull the wine ID out of the type that we got, and we'll return the wine data. Now, what about this ID? You notice up here that it's declared as an out parameter of string. Now, it's doing this because the caller is posting some data to our collection. The caller doesn't know what ID this should have, and really, we don't want them to know because the way we get wine IDs in our case is that we have a database column, it's an identity column, and SQL Server is going to decide what the ID is. So the collection service base class is just asking us, when you figure out what the ID is, would you return it to me? Now here's the powerful thing. What it does with that is that it then takes this ID and builds a URI for it because the HTTP specification says then when we add a new resource, we should do two things. We should first of all return 201, which means created, and a special header, a location header, that has a URI to the new resource that we just created. And that's what the RestStarter kit's going to do for us, so we've done the right thing there. So let's fire up our solution in the debugger. The RestStarter kit does something wonderful for us, and it generates a help page for us automatically. So if I just call service.svc whack help, I get this page. Now this is an Atom feed page. If you see raw XML here, it's because you've got the feed reading view turned off. But this Atom feed is giving me some information about our service. Now this isn't optimal for where we want to be long term. We've made some changes for it for .NET 4, but it's pretty good. It's a good start. Now here's the method where I add an item. Now I can add an item in JSON or XML. In this case, I'm going to add an item as XML, and I can even look in here and see an example of what that would look like. Here's some sample XML data. Gives me an idea of kind of what it would take to add one of these. And I can also get a schema for it as well if I want to see a schema. So we get a nice schema XSD file we could save off or generate or make available to people on demand. Now we have a problem because we want to test our add method, but we can't add from IE. So we're going to have to use something else to add. And that's where Fiddler comes in. Fiddler is a free tool. It's actually written by a Microsoft guy from the IE team that allows me to kind of play around with HTTP requests and see what they're doing. We're going to use Fiddler's request builder here to create a request. Now, when we add a new item to the collection, it's going to be a post, and then we need to put in the URL that we're going to post to. Now, just a word of warning here, you notice I am not using localhost in the URL. I'm using 127.0.0.1. That's because localhost addresses bypass Fiddler, and Fiddler won't be able to see what's going on with them. So I'm going to use that address there. The other thing I need to do is I need to say what is the content type. What are we passing? In this case, I'm going to pass XML to our browser. And in the lab manual, I have some sample request data if you just want to copy and paste that. It does need to match up to the what the server is expecting. So here was some wine data. We're going to add a wine with a bottle price of 99. That should make it easy to find in the database. Now you might notice that if you compare this data with what you saw coming back in the browser, there are quite a few fields missing from this, and that's okay. The WCF REST service is using the data contract serializer, and it's tolerant of missing fields, so it won't blow up unless you have a field marked as that it's required. But any field that's missing, it's not going to worry about it, and that's okay, because that's what we want here. So now I'm going to execute this request, and it goes off and executes it. Let's look at the response, and you'll notice the response says 201 created. That's just what we wanted. And there's a special location header down here. We see that the URI to our new wine is 36. That's the ID of the new wine. That's great. In fact, if we go back to our browser and let's just invoke the service. If we scroll to the bottom, we should see our new wine there, wine 36. There it is. And all of the data. Now you want to remember the ID of the wine you got because we're going to use that later when we update and then delete the wine. Okay, so let's shut this down and we'll go back to Visual Studio. Let's do update item. Once again, there's a little sample implementation in there. We're going to nuke that and replace it. Same kind of thing going on here. We get in a string ID that we need to convert into an int. So we're going to do a little try parse. We'll throw an exception if you can't parse it. In this case, our update wine just takes the new wine, which has as a member the wine ID member. And so we're going to stick that wine ID into our new value just to make sure that it's in the right place. We'll call into our table gateway and try to update the wine. Now, what happens if you pass in a wine that doesn't exist? You're trying to update a wine that does not exist. Well, it's not a problem. The data layer, in our case, is going to throw a key not found exception. Your data layer might be doing something different. It's up to you to figure out what that is. But I'm going to catch this key not found exception. And if that's thrown, I'm going to return a status code of not found. Okay, so that way the caller knows they're trying to update something that doesn't exist. Let's fire this up in the debugger. And we'll test it again with Fiddler. And the request builder. Now this time, since we're doing an update, that's done with an HTTP put. So I'm going to put in here the URI. Remember that we were doing wine 36. So I'll put in wine 36 here. Once again, our content type is text XML. I don't need to worry about updating the content length because Fiddler will do that automatically when I submit this. Now I'm going to paste in some different data in the request body. Now it'll have a different bottle price and it'll say updated and so forth. That way we can tell that we've updated it. Let's execute this, and bam, the service returned 200, okay, which means that our update took place, And if we come back over here to the browser, let's refresh it, go all the way to the bottom, and we see now we have updated test description and the price is 23, so that's good. Our update worked. Let's shut it down. And the last thing we need to do is add the support for deleting an item. So I'll come in here and select on delete item. And again, let's just nuke that sample code with code from the lab manual. Same kind of thing going on here. We parse out the int. We call into our gateway and say delete the wine. If it can't find it, it says key not found, and we'll throw a web protocol exception. This is getting, you know, pretty simple, right? It's the same stuff over and over again. But that's the sign of a good service. It really delegates a lot of the heavy lifting to other parts of your code, like a data access layer and that kind of thing. So let's come over here to Fiddler to test that out. We'll go to our request builder. This time we're going to select the delete method. Now, Fiddler turns the request body red because deletes don't have a request body. And we can just nuke all these headers. Now we've got in here, we're just going to delete in the URI. That's all we've got to pass in. Execute. Hey, it returned 200. That means okay, we're good to go. Refresh. Let's browse to the bottom here. And our updated added wine 36 is gone, okay? So it's no longer there, and our service is working. Now let's take one last task that we've got to consider, which is this line up here at the beginning of our class, this attribute that says service behavior. Unless you're well-versed in WCF, you probably don't know what this line means. So let me explain some of the things about it, and we'll set it properly for our service. Service behavior controls how WCF is going to behave at the service level. There are also operation behaviors you can apply, but we're not using those. So let's focus here. One of the first things we have is include exception detail in faults. Of course, fault is a kind of soapism. There are soap faults. But this still applies here in REST in that that web protocol exception allows you to return fault information. And if you pass fault information and this parameter is true, then it will throw, it'll include this this additional information which helps clients to debug what's going on. Typically, this is turned off when you put your service into production, but while you're developing, it's kind of useful to have it on, so we'll leave it on for now. Instance context mode controls how WCF looks at instances of your class. Remember, our service is just a class. It will be created and it will be disposed of as necessary. Now, when we set the instance context mode to single, what that means is that WCF will create just one of these and it will use the same one for every request. Okay, and then there's a third thing here, concurrency mode. The concurrency mode here is set to single, and that means that WCF will create one of these, it will dispatch a request to it, and it will block until that request is complete, and any thread, any request that comes in will be blocked, so it will only process one request at a time. Now you might say, gee, Ron, that doesn't sound very scalable. You would be right. This is kind of a setting that you would use to ensure that your code was thread safe, but it's not a very scalable way to do it. Now, it's set this way because the sample code uses a dictionary that's a member field and it's not thread safe. But our code isn't in that condition anymore. So first thing let's do, we don't need this dictionary anymore. Let's get rid of that so nobody's tempted to use it because that would not be thread safe. And then we'll change our concurrency mode here to multiple. Okay, multiple means that WCF will dispatch as many calls as it gets straight to the service class regardless of what threads are going on or how many threads are calling it. So it's up to us to ensure that our implementation is thread safe. Okay, I know that this implementation is thread safe because our service class has no fields, there's no state that's shared amongst multiple requests. Calls into the data layer are likewise safe because all they do is call ADO.NET and pass this all the way down into the database. And the way we use Entity Framework was safe because we didn't share context across requests. Thread safety is a difficult issue. Let's just be dead honest here. It's pretty difficult, but as a general rule, if you treat each request in isolation, all the way down to the database, You should be okay. Now, how do we know that these changes we just made didn't blow everything up? Well, that, my friend, is where tests come in. Let's bring up the test window here, and we'll go in and see the tests in our solution. There are 8 tests, and we're going to run these tests just so that we know that we didn't break anything in the solution by making these changes that we've made. And, of course, you can view the code in here if you want to see how these tests are written and how you can write your own integration tests. Now, you can select all of these and click the Run button here, and it will just run the test. Or, if you want, you can hit Control-R-A, which will run the test in the debugger, but it will break on exceptions. So if you don't want it to break on exceptions, you can turn off the unhandled exceptions breaking behavior, or you can just run them this way. So I ran my test. I can see that 8 of 8 tests passed. Our solution's verifiably correct for the test that we have. So that's it. In this lab, we started out with just in kind of an empty shell of a project, added the REST collection service template, and then modified its behavior so that it's returning data from our data layer all the way out to the web. Now, of course, a service that updates data in the real world is going to have security on it. We didn't add security to this collection service yet. It's very possible to do that. We have a video on Endpoint TV that's going to show you how you can get that done. Hope you enjoyed it. For Endpoint TV, I'm your host, Ron Jacobs.